الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. Okay, that was one of the briefest explanations of Mustalah. What is Mustalah, by the way? Hadith terminology, hadith classification. We finished with that topic, okay? For our levels. Now you understand the more important categories. Like I said, there are 50 or 60, you know, different things to talk about in Mustalah, you know? And we only covered like maybe 20 of them, okay? There's a lot more to cover. We're going to cover one of them in greater detail now, okay? And this is called the science of Al-Jarh wa Ta'deel. The science of Al-Jarh wa Ta'deel, okay? The science of Jarh and Ta'deel. The science of classifying the narrators on their based on their acceptability, okay? How acceptable they are. You guys can get one of those things if you want. There's more. If you want. Okay, now what is Jarh and what is Ta'deel? Jarh means, what is Jarh and what is Ta'deel? Jarh means to accuse the narrator of being weak, okay? And Ta'deel means to make the narrator trustworthy or to classify him as a trustworthy narrator, okay? Jarh means to accuse the narrator of being unacceptable in his transmission of hadith, okay? Let me write this down. Can you please spell out that as writing in Arabic? Ja-ra-ha. Jim-ra-ha. Of being unacceptable. Jim-ra-ha. Okay? If you want to write it in English, jarh. Jarh, okay? To accuse the narrator of being unacceptable, okay? So, when you make jarh of him, you're either accusing his adl or his dabt. You're either accusing his adl or his dabt. You understand this? Right? When you're saying that he's not acceptable, his hadith is not acceptable, then you're either accusing his trustworthiness or you're accusing his what? His memory. Okay? So one of these two things, you must be accusing them for his hadith not to be acceptable. Ta'deel is the exact opposite. That's first is a ta, then an ayn, then a dal, then a ya, then a lam. Ta'deel, in English, T-A-D-E-E-L. Ta'deel. It means to make the narrator trustworthy, okay? To make him trustworthy and have dabt. In other words, the opposite of jarh, okay? Is to classify the narrator as trustworthy and as having acceptable memory. At least acceptable memory, okay? Now, this science, of the science of jarh wa ta'deel is used, obviously, to classify the narrators and to base their hadith on this classification, okay? Do you understand what this science is about? We're talking about narrators here. We're talking about the names of those people in the chains. Okay, we're going to go to the books of Jarh wa Ta'deel, the scholars of Jarh wa Ta'deel, okay, and they're going to use certain principles of Jarh wa Ta'deel. In our times, we don't have to do Jarh wa Ta'deel. It's already been done upon the scholars of by the scholars upon the narrators of hadith. Okay, when it comes to the narrators of hadith, we don't do it anymore because it's already been done. Okay, and who is qualified to do Jarh wa Ta'deel? The muhaddithun, and not only all muhaddithun, but a special category of muhaddithun. Okay, Imam al-Bukhari, for example, was one of the famous scholars of Jarh wa Ta'deel. He had a book. He wrote it when he was 18 years old. By the way, his first book that he wrote was the book of Jarh wa Ta'deel. He was 18 years old, and he wrote a book which, in our times, is published in like 8 volumes. 18 years old. Okay, and it's a very, very famous book of Jarh wa Ta'deel, At-Tariq al-Kabir. Okay, it's the big history that he called it. And he mentioned all of the names from the Sahaba's time until his time of the people of Hadith, narrators of Hadith. Okay, and he compiled the book when he was 18 years old. His first book that he wrote, by the way, At-Tariq al-Kabir. Okay, so this is the science of Jarh wa Ta'deel. We're going to make a long story short. We're going to say we go back to certain books written by certain scholars, okay, and we just have to look up the status of the person of Jarh wa Ta'deel. Okay, now before we get to the 12 levels of Jarh wa Ta'deel, I want to just briefly mention, this is a better one, I want to just briefly mention the most important book or books in Jarh wa Ta'deel so that we know of their existence and we know who they are by, okay? Now obviously the scholars of the Salaf themselves, the scholars of the past, they had written books of Jarh wa Ta'deel and they are more than 100 if you like, more than 70 to 100 are in print. I don't know how many they wrote and are lost, but more than 70 to 100 are actually in print and available to our times. Any writing before, you know, like till 400 Hijrah, okay? But the point is, later scholars, they had some advantage over earlier scholars. What is that? more research has been done. Okay? You have all the books in front of you. So like in our time, we can just buy all these books and have so many hadith in front of us that many of the muhaddithin in the past would never have. So like scholars, later scholars, they had the advantage of having ready-made pamphlets or books that they could compile together. So Imam Ahmad wrote a book, Imam Bukhari wrote a book, someone came after them, got both of these books, and added them together. Okay? That's the basic principle, that the later they were, they couldn't perform jahwa ta'dil in the sense that they had to rely upon earlier people, okay? But they could combine and compile more and more books. Okay? So what happened was that one scholar by the name of Abdul Ghani al-Maqdisi, this is a really brief history, just want you to know these books so that you can use them. Not use them, but even if you read them about them, you know what they are. Al-Maqdisi, okay? He wrote a book called, what is it called? Abdul Ghani al-Maqdisi died 610, I believe, or 600, one of the two. So he's like, you know, not of the scholars of the Salaf, right? I mean, quite a while ago, 800, 900 years ago. Okay? Abdul Ghani al-Maqdisi. He wrote a book called Al-Sheikh. My handwriting, man. My mother always told me. Al-Kamal fi Asma al-Rijal. Okay? Important book. This book was so thorough and so comprehensive that every author that came after him had to rely upon his book. Didn't we just repeat something similar like this yesterday? For which science? Mustalah. Which book did we talk about? Ibn Salah. Someone starts to Salah. Ibn Salah, he wrote a book called Muqaddimah. Okay? So, in other words, the point is, in almost every field, one alim comes along. Okay, one alim comes along and he compiles such a good work, such a voluminous and comprehensive work that every alim that comes after him has to benefit from his work. Okay, so the guy that did this for Jarh wa Ta'dil is this guy, Abdul Ghani al-Maqdisi 610, Al-Kamal fi Asma al-Rijal. Okay, he wrote a book that was so perfect, so good, that everyone that came after him had to rely upon this book. Now, he chose in this book to compile the names of the narrators in six books of hadith. Because obviously the narrators are thousands and thousands and thousands, right? So he had to limit himself. Which names am I going to use? Do you understand what I'm talking about? For example, all the names in Sahih Bukhari, I'm going to put in my book. Okay? All the names in Sahih Muslim, I'm going to put in my book. Okay? You understand this? The index of which books though? So he chose six books of hadith. And this is why, to this day, when we say the six books, we refer to particular six books because this guy chose these six books. Everyone knows these six books. What's the first one? Bukhari. Second one? Muslim. Third one? Abu Dawood. Fourth one? At-Tirmidhi. At-Tirmidhi. Fifth one? An-Nasa'i. Sixth one? Ibn Majah. We're going to talk about that in a little while. These are the six books he chose. Okay? We're gonna repeat them after in a little while, okay? The point is though, I want you to realize, when we say the six books, right? Why do we say six books? Who was the one that chose them? This guy did. And why did he become so famous? Because his book of Jarh wa Ta'dil was so good that those six books became more well known than all the other books were before him. He was the one that first chose these particular six books, okay? Now this book, as far as I know, it's not available in print because another person by the name of Jamaluddin Al-Mizzi. And he was one of the students / teachers / close friends of Ibn Taymiyyah. Okay? Mizzi died around 720-ish. 20-ish. Whatever. This. 721, 728, something like that. Okay? Mid-20s. Okay? He died. He was one of the students / teachers / very close friends of who? Ibn Taymiyyah. Okay, they were very close friends and they benefited from each other. That's why I call them students / teachers. Okay, Jamaluddin al-Mizzi, he came and he took this book and he basically added more stuff and compiled more stuff and deleted, you know, stuff that wasn't necessary, and he came out with another book called Tahzib al-Kamal. Okay, this book now is available in print and this is the standard major reference of the muhaddithin of our times. Okay, no student of hadith, no scholar of hadith is without this book. Why didn't they publish this book? Because Mizzi did such a good job of, you know, reorganizing it and adding some more information and taking up stuff that wasn't needed, that this book was pretty much ignored. And even manuscript copies of this book are rare. This is the book that people rely upon now. Tahzib al-Kamal. Okay? This book is published, can anyone guess in how many volumes? Just a rough guess. 8? 9? 25? 10? 38 volumes. That big. It's that big. It's a bit too expensive for me to afford, so I don't have that one yet. Okay, but I have it in the library, which we need. I mean, you know, inshallah, before I leave Medina, I have to buy it. But right now, I don't need to buy it for my personal library, so I don't have it. Tahzib al-Kamal. Obviously, it's an expensive book, but it's available. Obviously, it's in Arabic. Huh? We don't worry about it. Okay, so the point is, so this is the primary reference for the names of the narrators. Tahzib al-Kamal. After him, I want you to know these books. Why do I want you to know these books? Because so that you, when you're reading, read with an open mind. We look at the footnotes, see where they get the information from. And a lot of times, these books that we're quoting yesterday in Mustalah today, in Jarh Ta'dil, you'll know, oh, I know that book, I took that. I know Tahzib al-Kamal is the primary, the major encyclopedia. You do not get any book of Jarh Ta'dil bigger than this book. There is no book on the face of this earth that is more thorough and more comprehensive than Tahzib al-Kamal. Okay? No book. This is the encyclopedia. No one can do a better job than him. He's done the best job. Now Ibn Hajar came. Who is Ibn Hajar? Ahmad ibn Ali. Ibn Ali. Ibn Hajar. When did Ibn Hajar die? 780. How can Ibn Hajar die in 680 and do something to this book? 852 or 854, I don't remember. I think it was 854, I think. Ibn Hajar, who died in 854, okay? He took this book. By the way, what does Tahzib mean? Tahzib means summarized essence. Like he took the essence of it, okay? This doesn't mean that it was smaller than Muqtasid, it was actually bigger than him, but he meant he was going to summarize it and reorganize it. So he took this book called Tahzib al-Kamal, and he said, well, it's too big for the average student to benefit from. Imagine 38 volumes in print in our time, how many volumes it would be of handwriting in his time. So he said, let me just condense it all up. Okay, let me condense it all up and make it into a smaller work that more people can benefit from, students of knowledge, and they can use that as a reference book. Okay, so then he came and he wrote Tahzib al-Tahzib. Same thing, Tahzib al-Tahzib. The summary of the summary, very good. The summary of the summary. Okay, that was the summary of the Kamal. Now Ibn Hajar came and wrote Tahzib al-Tahzib, the summary of the summary. This book is available. 4 volumes is average size, 2 volumes, okay? This is like, obviously, from 38 you get down to something like this, okay? 4 or 5 volumes of Tahzib. So basically he took this book and he made it, compressed it. He didn't delete any names. In fact, he added some more names, but the biographies, if you go to this book, you'll read, you know, about his characteristics, what he looked like, you know, what he ate and drank sometimes, you know, what he used to wear sometimes. And this shows you how much the religion of Islam was preserved. You even know when a person died, who he married sometimes, what his kids' names were sometimes, you know. You find all this information preserved in the books of Hadith. No other religion can claim this. And only when you go to the books of Jarh wa Ta'dil do you realize how the Sunnah has been preserved. Can you imagine? We're not talking about the Prophet. We're not talking about the Sahaba. We're talking about people that lived hundreds of years after the Prophet ﷺ. All of this information has been, if they narrated Hadith, all of their life has been compiled. Okay? Who were his sheikhs? Who were his students? Who did he recite to? Okay, how qualified was he? What was his memory? Who tested him? All of this is gonna be discussed here. Okay, so he came and wrote Tahzib al-Tahzib, and this is the standard resource work also. That's the encyclopedia. This is like the standard resource that you go to. But he felt that this too was too big. So then the same guy, Ibn Hajar, he wrote another book called the same names. Tahzib al-Tahzib al-Tahzib? No. Taqrib al-Tahzib. Which means, basically, the condensation of the summary. Okay? He made it even smaller than that. Taqrib is available in 1 volume. 1 volume. All it says is his name, his father's name, his grandfather's name, his tribe, and his degree. His level of Jarh wa Ta'dil. That's it. No information of who his sheikhs were, who his students were, who, you know, nothing. Just one word at the end. Ba'if. That's it. Khalas. You know? Kazab. Liar. Khalas, you know, or Imam, great Imam, you know, or Hafiz, memorizer. That's just one word.
One word
Just one word for every single person. So this is like the quick, easy reference, okay? You have this right next to your shelf, you just look it up quickly, that's it. And if you need to do a little bit more, you go to Tahzeeb. If you need to do a real encyclopedic work, then you go to Tahzeeb al-Kamal of Mizzi. Obviously, there are tons and tons of other works, but if you know these three names that I told you, this is sufficient, okay? The tribe name, what his kunya was, okay? So for you, it would be Imran ibn Uddin ibn Muhammad, let's say, okay? Abu what? Your kunya. Abu Harith, okay? Al-Bangladeshi, okay? Comma, then, are you thiqa, or are you imam, or are you hafiz, or whatever, okay? That's it, end of story. Also, one more thing, when he died, sorry, one more thing, when he died, okay? 152, whatever, and also he'd give you the level. I mean, you know, basically one word phrases, two, three pieces of information, that's it. No biographical information except his date of death. And also there's a, he has a level system. He classifies from the Sahaba until the time of the Imams. I mean, the Imams meaning the six Imams, right, of Hadith. He says there's 12 levels, and he classifies all of these guys into 12 generations. Okay? So this is Taqrib al-Tahzeeb. Taqrib al-Tahzeeb, one volume, this big, that's it. Just go look it up, that's it. One line on each guy. Tahzeeb al-Tahzeeb, sometimes you'll have a page on a guy. Sometimes you'll have two, three paragraphs on a guy. Okay? Tahzeeb al-Kamal, pages and pages. Sometimes biographies last 40, 50 pages in Tahzeeb al-Kamal. Okay? I'm telling you, it is literally, you know, that big. 38 volumes of pure, hardcore information about biographical information. Birth, death, sheikhs. Every single sheikh he ever met in his life, sometimes 1,000, all of them are going to be written down. Every single person that ever studied under him, okay, all of them are going to be written down. So these are the more important books of Jarh wa Ta'dil. I just mentioned three of them. Like I said, they are over 100 works in print. In print. How many volumes is Tahzeeb wa Tahzeeb? Tahzeeb wa Tahzeeb depends on which you know printing you get. I have one of the you know considered one of the best printings is 4 volumes this thick. It's like 4 times the size of Taqrib. Taqrib is like one volume that thick. It's a very beautiful print, the one that they recently came out with. And Tahzeeb with Tahzeeb, it depends on which printing you get, obviously, because they're different prints. But it's like basically 3-4 times the size of Taqrib. So it's like 4 volumes, thick volumes. Okay. Tayyib. Now we understand what Jarh wa Ta'dil is. And I'd just like to briefly mention the categories of Jarh wa Ta'dil. What time do we finish? 5:15?
Yes.
Okay. Jarh wa Ta'dil has 12 categories to it. Okay? And realize we're not going into detail. This is just so that you understand this is the concept. Read up more about it. Okay? Jarh wa Ta'dil has 12 categories. 6 categories of Jarh and 6 categories of Ta'dil. So we're going to go down 1 through 12 in order of trustworthiness and memory all the way down to the lowest. Okay? So now we start off with number 1. Now when you go to, for example, Taqrib wa Tahzeeb, for example. What is Taqrib wa Tahzeeb? The smallest one, the one volume one, right? You're only going to find these terms that we're going to talk about now. Just one term, that's it. This guy, he was this. That's it. Okay? Now the highest level, the highest rank that they have, okay, is to say that to have a description of extreme praise. So for example, you would say that for example, Imam Bukhari said Imam al-Dunya, the Imam of this world, okay, or Hafidun, Siqatun, I mean many words like this is a Hafid, he's a memorizer, he knows it, the extreme praise. Okay, what is this categorized as? We're talking about the categories of Jarh wa Ta'dil now. Okay? We're talking about the categories of Jarh wa Ta'dil. We're saying that there's 6 categories of Jarh, 6 categories of Ta'dil. Jarh wa Ta'dil mean? We already said Jarh. Ta'dil means to make a narrator or to presume that not to presume, but to judge a narrator as being trustworthy, acceptable in his what category? This is Jarh wa Ta'dil. Jarh wa Ta'dil. Okay. We're talking about the categories of Jarh wa Ta'dil here. So for example, we're just giving an example. We're saying that he is the Imam of this dunya, right? or he is the scholar of our times, or he is the Shaykh al-Islam, the Shaykh of Islam, yani a huge title. In other words, you cannot get a title higher than that. Okay? Another thing that the scholars would say a lot about something of that nature is, I don't know anyone of his nature. I don't know anyone of his status. Okay? So the highest level of praise possible. Okay? This is obviously very rare, and only the famous ulama, like for example, Sufyan al-Thawri, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Imam al-Bukhari, Sufyan ibn Uyayna, only these would qualify, the highest, major, famous ulama. Famous ulama. The highest level of praise. You can't get higher than that. I don't know anyone like him in this world. Can you get higher than that? When a scholar of Jarh al-Ta'dil would say a phrase like this, the highest possible phrase that a person could say. Okay? In Arabic? No, there's no one word they would say. They would say like, أَوْثَقُ الْخَلْقِ, meaning the most trustworthy of all of mankind. The point is, you cannot get a higher praise than that. Okay? Or حَافِظُ الدُّنْيَا, right? The Hafiz of our times. Or Shaykh al-Islam. Or Shaykh al-, you know, like something that, a big huge title. Imam al-Muhaddithin. Imam Bukhari, they call him Imam al-Muhaddithin. The Imam of the Muhaddith. He wasn't just a Muhaddith from Bukhari. He was the Imam of the Muhaddithin. Okay, so this title is very rare, obviously. This title is very rare. The second category of ta'dil, now we're going lower now, obviously. The second category is extreme praise, but not the highest. Extreme praise. Now the point is, you have to realize, I'm not giving you the Arabic. In Arabic, they have special words for each category. Since you're not going to be looking up the works in Arabic, I'm not giving you the Arabic words. But the point is, just understand the concept is the point. Extreme praise. And an example that they give of that is, so-and-so is not asked about. You don't ask about this guy. He's that good. There's no need even to ask about him. Well, you can get higher than that. You can say he's the Shaykh of Islam, or he's the Shaykh of the Imam of this dunya, but it's extreme praise, but not to the level of number one. Okay? So they say, for example, like I said, such and such a person is not asked about. No doubt about him. Okay? Extreme praise. Okay? Number three is, to repeat, a phrase of ta'dil, if you like, for lack of a better word, since we're not going into Arabic. To repeat a phrase of ta'dil twice, okay? So to say, for example, Imamun Hafiz. Everyone knows these words. Imam Hafiz. He is an Imam and he is a Hafiz, okay? To say, for example, Fiqah, by the way, is the most common word. Fiqah means he is trustworthy, okay? Thiqatun adil. Everyone knows what adil means, where he took it. Okay? Thiqatun hafiz. Okay? Thiqatun hujjah. You have a lot of words you can use, but you use two words, not just one. Okay? The fourth one, obviously, is just to use one word. To use one word of ta'dil. To use one word of ta'dil. So you say, for example, shaykh. Or imam. Or thiqah. Thiqah is the most common word that they use, by the way. You might want to write this down. Thiqah. Thiqah means trustworthy. Thiqah. Tha, with three dots. Thiqah, just trustworthy. This is the most common term. So if you say thiqatun thiqah, he'll come under number three. If you say thiqah, he'll come under number four. Okay? Now, the point is, why are we talking about all this? All of these four categories, their hadith will be what? Be more precise. Sahih, exactly. All of these four categories, if you have people, for example, the Shaykh Imam Bukhari is going to be of this level, obviously. Bukhari is of this level. Okay? His Shaykh, extreme praise. His Shaykh, maybe this type. And then the Tabi'i, perhaps he's this type. And then the Sahabi, what level does the Sahabi fall under? Yeah, a Sahabi. Which level does the Sahabi fall under? He doesn't even fall under this classification. He's above it. He's above it. All of the Sahaba, you don't say, never say thiqah or anything. They're above this classification. They don't enter this classification. Okay? Therefore, when Ibn Hajar in his taqrib, he says that so-and-so, he says Sahabi. End of story. Nothing more needs to be said about him. We said all Sahaba, they are trustworthy and they have adil and they have dhabt. Okay? So all of these four categories are sahih. The point is, when you look at the isnad, the first thing you look at, is it connected or not? How do you know this? You go to the books of Jarh wa Ta'dil, you find out who was a sheikh of who was a student of who. So which book would you go to primarily? dead wrong. Taqrib al-Tahdhib, does that even mention the students and the teachers?
No.
We said no. You would first go to Tahdhib al-Tahdhib. And most likely you would find it there because he summarized the teachers for you. He didn't mention all the teachers. If you didn't find it there, where would you go? Tahdhib al-Tahdhib. You go to the big encyclopedia, okay? You go to Tahdhib al-Tahdhib. If you did not find it there, that means that this guy wasn't a student. So there's a book and chain there. Tahdhib al-Kamal, excuse me, you're right. Tahdhib al-Kamal, you go to Al-Mizzi, okay? So you would find out, is it connected or not? You would see which year is this guy born and which year did that guy die, okay? You would find out, did this man ever study from this man or not? And you would go to the books of Jadid to find that out, okay? Second thing you'd have to look at is his... The second thing for the Sahih Hadith is Adil. And the third thing is? Bab. So then you would go to the same books of Jarh al-Ta'dil and find out what did they say about him. If they said any of these things, then the category is Sahih. And the fourth thing you have to look at is Shadh and Illah. So if there's no Shadh and there's no Illah, and the guys are of this level, all of them, then the Hadith will be classified as? Sahih. Where'd you get Hassan from? If all of the guys are from this level, Sahih. So even if one of them is here and three of them are there, or all of them are here, doesn't matter. It's Sahih. Okay? Now obviously even Sahih has categories. We don't have names for them, but when it comes to Muhaddithin, then they would look at even these categories. Okay, but for our purposes, all of this is Sahih. Tayyib, we finished the first four. We said there are six, right? So now we go to 5 and 6. Obviously the Prophet astaghfirullah, that's... Okay. The Sahaba, no, they're not even in this classification. The Sahaba are not even in this classification. They're above this classification. Okay, you don't even think of this classification for the Sahaba. Okay, all you have to know is that this person is a Sahabi. Let me give you a trivia here. Suppose we have an Isnad that goes back to the Tabi'i. Sahih Isnad, for sure. The Tabi'i says, one of the Sahaba told me that the Prophet said. The Tabi'i says one of the Sahaba. He doesn't mention the Sahabi. Okay? Up till the Tabi'i, up till the successor, the Hadith is Sahih. Is that Hadith going to be Sahih or not?
No.
Why?
Because you're still missing, like, it's
Mursal. It's Mursal, why? The Sahaba is missing? How is he missing? The Tabi'i says, one of the Sahaba told me. His name is missing, but hold on. It's not mawquf. The chain goes back to the Sunnah. Is the Sahabi missing or not?
No. We don't have the biography.
Do we care about the Sahaba's biography? They're above this classification. Do you see the point? We don't care as long as the Tabi'i says one of the Sahaba told me that the Prophet said the Hadith is acceptable. Because all it's Sahih. All of the Sahaba are above this classification. The problem arises when the Tabi'i says the Prophet ﷺ said. So we don't know, did he get it from a Sahaba or he might have got it from another Tabi'i also. You see? If the Tabi'i says, I heard one of the Sahaba say, there is a famous hadith of Mas'al al-Khufayn. The Tabi'i says that someone narrated to me who accompanied the Prophet ﷺ for 4 years that the Prophet ﷺ wept over his socks. The Tabi'i says this. He doesn't mention the Sahaba's name. This hadith is in Sahih Bukhari. Okay, why did Bukhari put it in the Sahih, even though the Sahabi's name is not mentioned? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, he's a Sahabi. Okay, let's get on back. Do you understand this trivia point?
Yeah.
Right? Important point, by the way. Good footnote to put. Okay, the fifth category is when you use average phrases. So that you say, for example, he has no problem. He has no problem with him. Okay? Basically, the you would call it average phrases, you know? I mean, if you say, he's okay. He's okay, you know? Theek hai, yeah. Okay, is this a praise? No, it's just average. It's like, you know, he's okay, you know? Theek hai, right? You know, theek hai, right? Okay, he's a nice guy. Okay, he has no problems with him. So an average phrase, and the sixth category is, how would you now define this? Lowest category. lowest category of average. Okay? Lowest category of average. So, for example, you would say, Inshallah, he's all right. Inshallah, he's all right. Many of the Sahaba, many of the ulama, they would say, Inshallah, he's thiqah. It's not the same as saying he's thiqah. Saying Inshallah, it says you have some doubts about him. Okay, Inshallah, he's okay, like that. That's another science in and of itself. Okay, that's another science in and of itself. How did they get to these categories? Okay, that's an interesting question. They would, literally test them. Literally, they would test them. Okay, they would come to them and they would mess their hadith up. See if they memorized it or not. Okay, they would test them and they would come to them 1 year and then they would come and ask them 5 years from there. See if they remembered it or not. Okay, they would literally test them, the scholars of the hadith, of each generation. Realize each generation has scholars of hadith. So Bukhari, he knows his shuyukh, his generations, okay? Ahmad ibn Hanbal is one generation before him, so he tests his shaykh. Imam Malik is one generation before them, so he tests his shaykh, like that. Okay, so every generation has scholars of the Jarh wa Ta'dil, and each of these scholars, they would test them like that. The point is though, the lowest category of average, what are these two hadith classified as? Hassan, exactly. Do you understand this classification? Where are we getting to it now? Right? This is Hassan hadith, that when a person is, for example, they say he's okay, or they say, he's okay, he made some mistakes. This is also comes under here. He's thiqah, but he made some mistakes. This also comes, he's alright, but he's the lowest category of average. You can't get below him without getting da'if. So they said his hadith is Hassan hadith. Okay? If the sisters can pay attention, inshallah. If they don't understand something, send a note or something. We don't want to go on until this is understood. Because it has to be understood when we are moving on. Okay, now we get to the, which categorization? Not really number 7, we start number 1 again, because we're doing 2. We're moving on to Jarh, okay? We're moving on to Jarh now. All of this was Ta'dil, okay? Okay, now we go on to the first category of what? Jarh. Now we're talking about Jarh, the categories of Jarh, okay? Now the first category of Jarh will come right underneath the 6th category of Ta'dil. So it's as if we're moving down from the best to the worst. Okay, the first category of jarh would be the slightest terms for weakness. You can't get any lower than him, slight term than him. I mean, they're being very, very nice, exactly. They say, for example, people talk about him. Okay? Fihi kalam. People talk about him. Okay? Like, what do they mean, people talk about him? They mean the scholars of hadith. Or they say, for example, he had a weak memory. He had a weak memory comes under here. Okay? We have our doubts, like this. Slightest thing. The slightest term. Huh? The slightest thing. Okay, this would be the first category. The second category, is to be explicit. So the first one was like very nicely, very gently, they say people talk about him. Okay, he's a nice guy, but he has a weak memory. Okay, the second category is that you are explicit. Okay, for example, you say da'if, khalas, this guy is da'if. Explicit phrase about him. Okay. This guy is da'if, okay? Or this guy cannot memorize his hadith, okay? Yeah, but we're saying though, he wasn't explicit in his terms, okay? So whenever a person is of number 1 or number 2, the hadith will be classified as da'if. The person will be classified as da'if, okay? Yeah, number 1, the difference is the phrasing that is used is much more gentle. Okay? But the hadith is still da'if. Now, why do we even divide this into 1 and 2? In tarjih, which is a different thing, okay? Otherwise, for the hukum purposes, it's all da'if. Both of their hadith is, or are da'if. Okay? So they would say, for example, he has some strange hadith. They would like this term. He has some strange hadith. In other words, hadith that no one else narrated. This would also be under this thing. Explicit. He has some strange hadith. Okay. Now, what is number three? Category number three? Exactly. Very good. That they would be explicit in more than one way. I mean, more than one term is used. More than one term, explicit, severely. I don't know how to really say this in Arabic and English, but let's say severely. Okay. So they would say, for example, ضعيف جدا. ضعيف جدا. Okay. Or they would say that rejected. That's another word that they would use. Rejected. Okay. His hadith are rejected. We don't have, people did not accept him. Or they would say, it is not permissible to narrate from him. It's haram to narrate from hadith from him. Okay? So this is not just explicit. This is,
haram?
Yeah. It's like haram to narrate from him. It's like, no, you can't narrate from this guy. So they're being really severe here. Okay? And the fourth category is to accuse him of lying. Okay? Accuse of lying. You accuse someone of lying. That so-and-so, he was accused of lying. They didn't actually say he was a liar. They'll say he was accused of lying. Okay? Both of these hadith are what? Where'd you get Moldor from? Don't guess. Daif jiddan. Do you understand why we're doing these categories? This is how you understand when we said what is his level of dhabt. What is his level of dhabt? The hadith is going to be either sahih or hasan or da'if or da'if jiddan. So suppose you have two chains. One of them has a guy that is rejected. The other chain has a guy accused of lying. Will both of these hadith then be raised to the level of hasan li ghayrihi? Never, ever. If you had a million chains, all of them had people that were in these two categories. Okay? It would never be raised to the hadith, to the level of حسن لغيره. We have two categories left. You can guess what they are. Very good, very good. Very good. Five, right? We're number five, right? Okay. Five to say that explicitly accuse him of lying. Explicit liar. Okay? Say he was a kazzab. Okay? We're getting there. This one will tickle you. This one will tickle you, okay? Or they would say, so-and-so stole hadith. He stole hadith. Meaning that he would narrate hadith that was not permissible for him to narrate. Someone else heard them, right? And he didn't hear them and he would steal them. He would take credit for it. He stole hadith. They weren't his hadith, okay? Or he didn't even hear them in the first place. So he just thought, this is like fabrication. Obviously, this type of hadith is what? Mawdu', right? Number five and six, both are considered mawdu'. Number six is, how do I call this one? It's the lowest of the low, okay? It's the lowest of the low. The trash, not even trash, it's worse. You can't get lower than that. Huh?
It's a degree.
Garbage. No, no, no. Huh? The scum, whatever. This is like the worst category of people. Worse than liars. So what terms would they use for them? Huh? This guy was a Dajjal. That's what they would say. This guy was a Dajjal. He wasn't the Dajjal, he was a Dajjal. That's what they would say. Dajjal. Dajjal is like the Antichrist, So that you can't get lower than this guy. And these type of guys are rare to find. Obviously they weren't your common, neighbors or anything, Like the worst, the filthiest scumbag you can get. The scholars of hadith would, use the worst names for them. Okay? Fulan, Dajjal, Fulan. What is the difference between four and five? Four, he was accused of lying. Five, they explicitly say he was a liar. Four, they say people accused him of lying. Okay? We don't know for sure whether he was a liar or not, but people accused him of lying. Okay? Oh, how do you spell it? Sorry. He was a liar. He was a liar. Okay. Huh? Worst. Whatever. Scumbag. Whatever you want to write, It's the worst possible. Another phrase they would say is, he was the worst liar on the face of this earth. You couldn't get worse than him. Okay? He was the leader of the liars. Okay? They would say he was the leader of the liars. The imam of the liars. Yeah. Okay, so you understand now. First, worst possible thing is the sixth category. These two, you understand the difference between 4 and 5. 4 is when he was accused of lying, but it was never substantiated that he actually lied. And 5 was when it was known that he lied. Kazzab. Kazzib and Kazzab, both would be here. Okay? Whereas 4 is people presumed him or thought him to be liars, but he was not a liar. And 6 is the worst possible scenario, and they have some funny phrases there. Okay? And by the way, this is a funny science. We studied this last year. We studied all of these phrases, you know. And they have some funny things, you know, the scholars of hadith. Of them was, some of the scholars would say, so-and-so is a sturdy camel. Meaning that, sturdy camel, meaning that he could carry hadith well. Okay, so he was like of the third category of tawthiq, of there. Okay, what else? There's some funny ones, you know, I mean, if you look at them, there's like more than, you know, hundreds of words that they use, particular words of Arabic, okay, that if you study them, there's also some hand signals that they used to do. Whenever, sometimes they didn't actually explicitly say so, they would have some hand signals to do. Tayyib, we finished Jarh wa Ta'dil, let me get into that too. We finished Jarh wa Ta'dil. Now we move on to the final topic of today, and that is the title of this section is Types of Hadith Books plus Examples, the most famous examples. Okay? Types of Hadith Books plus Examples. Actually, I do. Jazakallah. Tayyib. We're going to mention 9 of them in great detail. 9 of them, and only 3 or 4 we're going to go into great detail. Okay? What do I mean by types of hadith books? I mean, what was the methodology that hadith authors used when they wrote their books? There are certain types of methodologies. What was their manhaj, if you like, you know? What was their, what hadith did they compile? How did they arrange the hadith? What hadith did they choose? Okay, and we're going to discuss the names and examples so that you have an idea of the most famous books of hadith. The first type is called Jawami'. Al-Jawami'. That's Jim, Waw, Alif, Mim, Ayn. Jawami'. Literally, it would translate as comprehensive. Okay, comprehensive. So they would include, for example, fiqh. They would include tafsir, they would include history, they would include the stories of the prophets of before. So if you look at, for example, Bukhari's book, and this is one of the examples, you find that Bukhari has everything in his book. Right? Bukhari has everything in his book. He has Aqidah. He has a whole chapter on Kitab al-Tawheed, it's called. He has a Kitab al-Tawheed in his Sahih also. Okay, the last chapter he has is Kitab al-Tawheed. He has a whole section on Tafsir, Kitab al-Tafsir. He has many chapters on Fiqh, from Salah and Wudu and Tahara. He has sections on how the creation started, how Allah created mankind. He has sections on the history of the previous prophets. So it's comprehensive, everything. Okay? The most famous of these books are A. Al-Muwatta. Al-Muwatta by who? Imam Malik ibn Anas. Write the full names down and memorize them. It's a juicy question to ask you. No, when I meet you at Burger King. Well, of course on test. A.H. Al-Muwatta, Imam Malik ibn Anas, 179 A.H. Imam Malik ibn Anas. I want you to memorize the full names, at least the father's name, Malik ibn Anas. Okay? Malik ibn Anas, 179 A.H. Okay? Second most important book is, should I give them the full name of Bukhari? Forget it, it's too long. Sahih al-Bukhari. No, the full name of his Sahih. Al-Sahih al-Jami' al-Musnad al-Mukhtasar min Sunan Rasulillahi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Min what? Min Sunan wa ayyamihi? Af'ali, no. He has like 3. Al-Sahih, Al-Jami' Al-Musnad Al-Mukhtasar min Sunan Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam wa Af'ali wa Ayyamihi. This is Ayyamihi, yeah. Okay. So let's say Sahih Al-Bukhari. By who? Muhammad ibn Ismail. Muhammad ibn Ismail al-Bukhari. Abu Abdullah al-Ju'fi Mawlahum. When did Bukhari die? Very good, Harsh. And C is Sahih Muslim. Muslim ibn Ismail also? Everyone is Ismail? By Muslim ibn Hajjaj. Nothing to do with the famous Hajjaj. Al-Qushayri. Yes, his name is Muslim. Al-Qushayri. And he died 261 AH. Okay. Write this down quickly. We need to move on. It's not a jammer. Are you guys finished?
No.
Hurry up. We have to finish up.
What do I, is the most important?
No, it's the earliest of the three. That's why. I'm doing it in chronological order for your convenience. Okay. If you haven't taken it down, take it down from your people, other people, because we need to move on. We have to finish up. Okay. That was the first type of book. What is it? What type of category was it? Al-Jawami means it's comprehensive. Everything. The second type is Sunan. Sunan. What is the meaning of Sunan? Why are we saying Sunan? Very funny. Sunan means that they only collected those hadith related to, if you like, fiqh. They concentrated on fiqh. Okay? They concentrated on fiqhi aspects. So that's why, for example, Abu Dawood, which is a Sunan, he doesn't really talk about history. Okay, he doesn't talk about a lot of things. It's mainly fiqh. It doesn't mean he never talks about something. I'm saying the primary purpose is what? Fiqh. Okay? So, the first important book is? How can a Musnad be in the Sunan? Sunan Abi Dawood. If you say Sunan, you have to say Abi, by the way. You can't say Abu Dawood. Sunan Abi Dawood. It's going to be mudaf mudaf ilayh. Sunan Abi Dawood. Sunan Abi Dawood is the most important of this. And the author was Abu Dawood. SubhanAllah, my memory fails me. Yeah, it's Sijistani. What was his name? It's not going to work. Ibn Adam. Sulaiman ibn Ash'ad. How can I forget? Abu Dawood Sulaiman. Sulaiman ibn. By the way, Abu Dawood was his kunya. His name was Sulaiman. Sulaiman ibn Dawood. Ibn. Yeah, Sulaiman ibn Ash'ad. Sulaiman ibn Ash'ad. As-Sijistani. What year did Abu Dawood die? 275. From Sijistan. Sijistan is a province in the Russian states now. 275, right? Yes, 275. The next one is Sunan At-Tirmidhi. And by the way, many ulama, they classify Tirmidhi in the Jami' and they say Jami' al-Tirmidhi. Okay? So you want to put that as a footnote. That the ulama, many of the ulama, they classify Tirmidhi in the Jami' section. And wallahu alam, it is closer to the truth, but because of the fact that, many ulama, they also say Sunan, and this is what you read in the English books, I'll just put them in the Sunan. But in reality, Tirmidhi is closer to being a Jami' than it is in being a Sunan. What is Tirmidhi's name? Muhammad Ibn Isa. By the way, this is very important for your exam. You do realize that. Muhammad ibn Isa al-Tirmidhi. To know who the six people are, to know who al-Mizzi is, what year he died, describe his book, Tahdhib al-Kamal. All of this is important. Oh, when did al-Tirmidhi die? He died 279. Al-Tirmidhi. He was from Tirmidh. Tirmidh is a famous city. He was from Tirmidh and he died 279. Okay. The next one is Sunan An-Nisa'i. Sunan An-Nisa'i. Huh? It is both. An-Nasa'i and An-Nisa'i both are allowed. Okay. Over here I wrote An-Nisa'i. If you want to write, you can write An-Nasa'i. Okay. His name is Abu Azarman Ahmad ibn Shu'aib ibn Ali. So his name is Ahmad ibn Shu'aib. Let's forget the Ali. An-Nisa'i. When did An-Nisa'i die? 303. An-Nisa'i was the last of the six muhaddithin to die. An-Nisa'i was the last of the muhaddithin to die. No, not last of the muhaddithin, last of the six muhaddithin to die. Okay? Ahmad ibn Shu'aib. Ahmad ibn Shu'aib, the famous name Shu'aib. Okay? Ahmad ibn Shu'aib, An-Nisa'i. You can say An-Nisa'i and you can say An-Nasa'i. Both are allowed to say. We're getting there, we're getting there. I'm out of space. Okay. And D is Sunan Ibn Majah. Sunan Ibn Majah. Okay? His name is Muhammad Ibn Yazid Ibn Majah. Muhammad Ibn Yazid Ibn Majah. What year did he die? Yes, before 303. Very good. This guy's good. 279. Who also died 279? Tirmidhi. So they both died the same year. Fear says he died 273, but I'm positive he died 279. 279 AH. Muhammad ibn Yazid ibn Majah. Okay? 279 AH. Okay? So Ibn Majah, he also died the same year as At-Tirmidhi did. Okay? Yeah, most of the Imams, they knew each other. Bukhari and Muslim. Muslim was a student of Bukhari, for example. Okay? Now, just write down without the names Sunan Ad-Daraqutni, without the name of the authors. Daraqutni. E and F is Sunan Ad-Darimi. These are the more important sunans, okay? Forget the Daraqutni. Daraqutni died 380 or something, 80-ish. Ad-Darimi died 250-ish. Just don't worry about the dates, okay? Daraqutni and Ad-Darimi, these are the more important sunans. Don't worry about the dates, because I don't remember the exact dates, so it's best to leave that. Sunan Daraqutni and Ad-Darimi, these are also of the important sunan works, okay? So we mentioned how many sunan categories? Not categories, but books. Six books, okay? The most authentic of the Sunan is what? Sunan Abu Dawud. Sunan Abi Dawud, okay? Sunan Abi Dawud is the most authentic. Followed by? Tirmidhi or An-Nisa'i. There's a difference of opinion. But the point is, Nisa'i and Tirmidhi are very close to one another. Followed by? Ibn Majah, okay? And then Ad-Daraqutni and Ad-Darimi after that, okay? Now, what are the six books, by the way? The six books. Yes. Muhammad ibn Yazid ibn Majah. Here? E is Sunan Ad-Daraqutni, F is Sunan Ad-Darimi. Okay, finished? Rub it off? Okay. These are the more important books. Obviously, all of them are in print, and all of them, except for Ad-Darimi, have explanations to Sharah. You know? Tayyib, now we get to the third type, and this is the third type of what, Haris? Hadith books is Musnad. A Musnad is a hadith book that is arranged according to... Now obviously a Jami' and Sunan, how is it arranged? Chapter-wise, right? You're going to have the chapter of Wudu, the chapter of history, the chapter of this. A Musnad is where the hadith are arranged according to the Sahabi. Okay? So the Musnad, you're not going to look up chapters. You're not going to have any chapters. There are not going to be any chapters. All the hadith of a certain Sahabi are going to be in one location. So all the 2,000 hadith of Abu Hurairah are in one location. Okay? If you want to look up what he said, you're going to have to read the whole thing cover to cover of Abu Hurairah. Or for example, you know, Aisha. You know, 2,000-3,000 hadith of Aisha. If you go to a Musnad work, you're going to have to look it up. There's no sections, no chapters. It's all arranged according to the Sahaba. All the hadith of Abu Hurairah are going to be in one place, Anas ibn Malik another place, so and so another place. Basically, they are arranged according to the Sahabi. And obviously, the most important Musnad is what? Musnad Ahmad ibn Hanbal. Ibn Hanbal. When did he die? 241 AH, okay? Ahmad ibn Hanbal. It has over 30,000 hadith. Yes, Ahmad, it's the Imam Ahmad, same Imam Ahmad, Musnad Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, same Imam. The Imam that the Hanbali madhab, you know, all of the same. Musnad Ahmad ibn Hanbal is one of the biggest books of hadith. It has more than 30,000 to 40,000 hadith. Huge number of hadith. Okay? One of the biggest books of hadith. Not the biggest, but one of the biggest. Idgham Kamil, right? Iqlab Kamil. So it's going to be a noon with a meme. Okay. There's some more Musnads. We don't have to worry about them. They're pretty rare. Not really that common. Let's move on to four. Okay. Four is Mu'jam. Mu'jam works. Okay. What are the Mu'jam works? Mu'jam works are where the hadith are arranged based on the sheikh of the student, alphabetically. Okay? So, a person might have 100 sheikhs. He'll compile the works of each, the hadith of each sheikh separately. Okay? That definition will suffice for this, you know, this level we're going to. Basically, it's the order of the sheikhs. Okay? And the most famous mu'jam is the mu'jam of At-Tabarani. At-Tabarani. Tabarani died, here we go again, 370-ish, huh? 370-ish, okay? Basically, in the later half of the 3rd century. 4th century, actually, okay? Tabarani has three mu'jams. He has al-mu'jam al-kabir, he has al-mu'jam al-saghir, and he has al-mu'jam al-saghir chiddin, awsat, the middle. He has the big, medium, and small mu'jams. All three are in print, okay? Al-mu'jam al-kabir is 22 volumes, like that big, okay? And Al-Awsat is 10 volumes and Al-Saghir is like 2 volumes. Okay? So he has 3 Tabaranis. Awsat is the middle. Huh? It's like 10 volumes. You know? The next way of writing hadith or the, you know, books of hadith are the books of Ilal. What is an Ilal? Hidden defects, exactly. The books of hidden defects. So the scholars of hadith, they actually wrote books describing the Ilals of hadith. Okay, and the most famous book is that of Ad-Darqutni, who also has a Sunan, right? Ad-Darqutni, and this is available in 11 volumes, and this is one of the most advanced works for the student of Hadith. 11 volumes, just full of Ilal. Illa is singular, and Ilal is the plural. Okay, so basically, the scholars would write books about the Illas of Hadith. Okay, Ilal al-Hadith, and the most famous one is that of Ad-Darqutni. Okay, like I said, we're going to go over these other ones quickly because, you know, these are the more important ones. Okay, the sixth way of writing about the manhaj that they used to follow is ajza. Alif, jim, za, alif, hamza. Okay, you can say pamphlets if you like. Okay, pamphlets. Meaning that they would take a little topic. For example, Bukhari has a famous book called Juz Raf'ul Yadain. The Juz of Raf'ul Yadain. Raf'ul Yadain is prayer. You move your hands up. So he compiled all the hadith related to Raf'ul Yadain. It's a little pamphlet. Literally like 20, 30, 40 pages, you know. And he has Juz Qira'a Khalf al-Imam. The Juz regarding the hadith of reciting behind the Imam. So the Fatiha. So basically pamphlets regarding one small topic or regarding one sheikh or regarding one sahabi. Just a small pamphlet. You know, just a small book just compiling miscellaneous topics. Okay. And there are obviously hundreds and hundreds of ajza by the very name of it, you know, pamphlets. Any of the scholars of the past that wrote a little book about hadith is going to call it a juz. Juz of this, juz of that. Okay? So miscellaneous. You want to go into 89 or 79? Or we can ignore it because it's not really a practical value. No. Just tayyib. We will ignore that then, inshallah. And with that, if there are any questions, we're done with the various types of... hadith methodologies and the more important books, we mentioned all of them. Okay? If there are any questions tomorrow, inshallah, we want to cover the history of hadith very briefly. Okay? About the history of hadith and the compilation of hadith and how it occurred. Nothing to do with that.
If somebody was a liar or was a sinner of some sort and then repented, was his narration accepted after his repentance?
So the question is, if a person, you can go. If a person was a liar, brothers, sisters, lower your voice. If a person was a liar, okay, and he repented from his lie, will his hadith be accepted or not? That's what you're saying? There's an ikhtilaf here, a major ikhtilaf in Mustalah, that a repented liar, will his hadith be accepted or not, okay? And the correct opinion is that it goes back to the imam that knew him. If he felt that his repentance was sincere and true, then yes. Most of the scholars of hadith said no, actually. Most of the scholars of hadith said, if a person was known to be a liar even once in his life, then doesn't matter if he repented, his repentance is with Allah, we are not going to accept any of his hadith after that. But the correct opinion is that it goes back to the ijtihad of the alim, or the ulama, and they see, does he really and truly repent or not? Yeah, obviously. No, you specifically said lying.
Yeah, I said lying.
Other sins, no. I don't know any difference between about that. Other sins, if he left them and he repented and he became a pious Muslim, no. Sufyan al-Thawri was a highway robber when he was growing up. Right? When he was growing up. He repented and became an alim of hadith. No, we're not talking about sins. We're talking about lying about the Prophet in particular.
Okay, what I meant was, even if he was a liar before his repentance and then studied hadith after his repentance, not before.
The liar lying in the hadith of the Prophet or lying in the people's...
Just lying in general, then repented, went and studied.
Lying in general in the affairs of the world, that's a sin. So if he repented, it's accepted. Lying in the hadith of the Prophet, that is where the ikhtilaf comes. Okay? Only in this one area. All other sins, if he repented and he became a pious practicing Muslim, they're ignored. Okay? Yes?
My question is related to who? What if he was lying to the Prophet a lot when he was non-Muslim? Then he accepted...
No, Islam, when he accepts Islam, it's...
So even if he lied to the Prophet, but he was known, his character still was bad though.
But Islam removes everything before it. Islam removes everything before it. Okay? Just because a hadith is classified as fabricated, can it still possibly be true? The isnad can be fabricated and the matan can be true if it's reported in other hadith. Okay? That there could be a liar in the chain, but he happened to be narrating an authentic hadith, and we find that it's authentic through other chains, not through this chain. Does that answer your question? Okay? Just because one particular isnad had a liar in it, doesn't mean that that matan is a forgery for sure. If you find an authentic chain, then that hadith will be classified as authentic. Okay.
But we couldn't say that particular Mughlar hadith that we're talking about still has the possibility until we bring the proof that there's...
Yeah, obviously. The point is you have to bring proof. The general ruling is that if we find an isnad that is Mughlar, then the hadith is Mughlar. If you claim that it's not, you have to show us the isnads that are authentic. No, you say the hadith is Mughlar. Until you find other authentic isnads for this hadith.
The text could be right, you see.
Yes, because you don't know it's right until you find out. The hadith is Mawdu'.
That would open the door for any question to say any Mawdu'.
Has a possibility, none. Any more questions? These 12 categories was dubbed. All about dubbed. Who are the muhaddithin of this century? The muhaddithin of this century, Ahmad Shakir rahimahullah, he passed away in the 1930s. Shaykh al-Albani, without any doubt, and I speak this based upon certain personal knowledge, not based upon taqlid. As you know, I'm a student in the science of hadith. I have to rely upon Shaykh al-Albani's works. I read them and I benefit from them, and he never ceases to amaze me. And I speak this reading his works, not based upon ignorance. You know, I remember one thing I did, I found a certain hadith that I needed to check up for a class project of mine, and I knew that Shaykh al-Bani had his article on it, had an article on this hadith. So I decided to, put myself out to Shaykh al-Bani. I wanted to see how much I could do. Okay? So I spent like, you know, the whole day looking up all of the chains that I could for this particular hadith, you know. And then I wrote them all out. And I went and found that Shaykh Al-Albani had so nicely summarized all of these chains and done even more than what I had done. In much smaller work than I had done, you know. And I never ceased to be amazed by Shaykh Al-Albani's works. I'm telling you this personally, from personal experience, not based upon what, you know, the Salafi says. No, I'm saying from personal experience, I've read his works, you know. And no student of hadith, serious student of hadith, can live without his works now. They have become a standard reference in our times. Okay, I'm not saying he's divine or infallible. No, of course he makes mistakes as a human being. Okay, but I'm saying he is one of the greatest ulama of our times. Okay, and these two ulama in particular, Sheikh Ahmed Shakir, also there's another alim by the name of Al-Mu'allimi, Al-Yamani, Al-Mu'allimi. He passed away like 30-40 years ago. He was also a great muhaddith. Okay, but Ahmed Shakir, Al-Mu'allimi did not leave a lot of his own works. He did a lot of editing. Ahmed Shakir left a lot of his work, and Shaykh Albani is leaving even more. He has a lot of works, you know. So they're all students of Albani. You're getting there, inshallah. You know, but without any doubt, Shaykh Albani is one of the muhaddithin of our times. No serious student of knowledge can deny that.